This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, an upgrade for growers who don't settle for average. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. President Trump and Chinese President Xi had a conversation this morning, and the president tweeted about it. Trump, I mean, not Xi. No big deal. He does this all the time. Well, bean traders think it's a pretty big deal. The bean market is leading a strong rally in the grains this morning.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Boy, if you want proof that the bean market is tuned into every little move between the U.S. and China as it concerns trade, today is all the proof that you should need. And luckily, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking about the tariffs and how to maybe resolve some of these issues out there. Good morning. Thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. We have a jam-packed show for you today. In the next segment, we're going to be talking with Chris Hawthorne from the National Ag Statistics Service, or NASS. That is the division inside of USDA that is responsible for the survey-based estimates of crop production, commodity supplies, cattle hog inventories. Basically, if there's a supply-side estimate that is in the market, it comes from NASS. Chris is the acting head of the Field Crops Division at NASS. They've got a big report coming next week, and we will learn from Chris about how the estimates are generated this morning. At the bottom of the hour, we are going to be talking with Dr. Darren Hudson from Texas Tech University. Dr. Hudson is the director of a group called the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness. We'll hear from Dr. Hudson how the current business environment is impacting U.S. agriculture. And at the end, and you know what I want to do with him on this, guys? Earnings season was last week for the most part. A lot of good, strong earnings were reported by companies, but a lot of those companies included some warnings about how these tariffs could impact their earning potential going forward. I want to see if Dr. Hudson is calling BS on that or if he thinks it's a possibility. And at the end of the show, we're going to talk about some things that you can do this fall to get ready for next spring. Gail Strotman from FMC will join us to talk about fall weed control. All right, right now, let's turn it over to Betsy Jim and get an update on the news. What's going on, Bets?
Hey there, Chip. At first, I thought, maybe it's a slow morning with news. Well, that turned around about 30 minutes ago.
Yes, it did, didn't it?
It did. I mean, grains are in the green this morning. Soybeans rallying double digits. And I believe, anyway, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, Chip. This is all in response to the president having a conversation with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Now, here's the president's tweet. I'll read it. He said, quote, "Just had a long and very good conversation with President Xi Jinping of China. We talked about many subjects with a heavy emphasis on trade. Those discussions are moving along nicely with meetings being scheduled at the G20 in Argentina. Also had a good discussion on North Korea." Chip, what do you think?
Well, okay, a couple of things. When you break it down, we talked about many subjects, but they emphasized trade. I think that's one thing that the bean market wanted to hear. Discussions are moving along nicely. Any sign of progress, obviously, Betsy, is going to be taken as good news for this bean market. And I guess the discussions are moving along nicely is a sign of some progress on this. And then yesterday, remember all the conversation about are they or aren't they going to have the meeting down in Argentina on November 20th at the G20 meeting?
Yes.
Well, he gave some confirmation that they are that they are making or at least scheduling those meetings. Now, like I said yesterday, as long as they're in the same place, they might as well sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah.
But if the meetings are on the schedule on the 19th, it doesn't mean that they're going to happen on the 20th. Conversely, if the meetings are not on the schedule for the 19th, it doesn't mean that they're not going to happen. You just got to wait and see. And I think that's, but the market is obviously excited about the conversation that President Trump and Xi had this morning.
The thing I want to know, though, is I know the president has threatened China with another $257 billion in tariffs. Mm-hmm. If this planned meeting doesn't fix things, is that still on the table?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. I don't think the president's trade team is going to back off on any of the planned tariffs going forward. The reason that I say that, Betsy, is because they are looking for a response. And as I understand it, they put many requests on the table of the Chinese trade team, and they're not getting responses. What they want is a response. And I got a feeling the phone call this morning was about, hey, Gee, what's going on? Why can't we get a response?
if only it was that easy.
But I got a feeling that's what it was all about. And just trying to get some kind of a response. So, no, I think they continue to go forward with all the planned ramping up of the tariffs and all in an effort to get them to sit down at the table and negotiate. And, you know, it's the intellectual property. It's the technology issues that are really at the heart of this. I saw some estimates from Microsoft that China's theft policy of software and operating systems and so on has cost Microsoft alone over $10 billion in the last 10 years.
That's crazy. I'm running out of time here, but did you ever think 30 years ago when you were working on the Board of Trade that a tweet would impact the markets? Granted, they didn't have Twitter. I don't think they had TV back then either, Chip. I'm not sure, but...
Sometime I'll tell you about the modems that I used to use.
But really, did you ever think back in the day something like that on the internet could change?
We saw headlines all the time hitting the news wires, and they would have an impact. And I kind of look at a tweet like a headline on a news wire, a flash on the news wire. That it has the kind of impact that it does, I guess that's not surprising. But the mode of delivery is certainly surprising to me. No question about that. Betsy, we got to jump to Greg. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, that is Betsy Gibb, and Greg Anderson, editorial director at Drovers, joins me now. Greg, you still working on sustainability, right?
Yeah, we are working on sustainability, Chip, and the reason is because the Cattlemen's Beef Board and NCBA have released some information. We had a media sustainability summit last week. They told us about the work that your checkoff dollars are paying for, and here's the reason. About the headlines that you see in the media that say beef is not sustainable, it's the cause of global warming, on and on. Well, what the checkoff is doing is funding research to basically show that that's not true. We know that's not true because we know cattle, consume plants that humans can't eat and use marginal land and so forth. So, basically, sustainability and what they want ranchers to know is that you shouldn't be afraid of that word because, as ranchers already know, they are sustainable. And a couple of points here from this research compared to 1977, we're producing the same amount of beef with one-third fewer cattle. That's an amazing statistic, right?
Absolutely.
So better animal health. Better nutrition, better genetics. Sustainability, Chip, we shouldn't be afraid of that word.
That's right. And, you know, Greg, I'm going to give you, like, more than half the credit for putting me on that side of the sustainability argument, that we should not be afraid of it. And you've got a lot to do with that in my mind. Thanks, Greg. Coming up next, we got Chris Hawthorne from NASS at USDA.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
This one comes in from Twitter. What's the best product on the market for boosting sulfur levels?
Boosting sulfur levels in a soil is actually a fairly difficult task, so we need to find a source that can keep it available for longer.
MicroEssentials with Fusion Technology contains two forms of sulfur, sulfate sulfur for early season crop needs, and elemental sulfur that takes time over the growing season for season-long sulfur availability to that plant.
Today, what we know is that our crops not only need greater quantities of nutrients, they need to be available for longer, and any practice you can use to keep that available for longer will help. MicroEssentials is a tool in the toolbox to help you do that.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit MicroEssentials.com.
I've got Don Porter, herbicide technical product head for Syngenta, here with me today. Don, with the corn harvest underway, what are some of the things that our listeners should be looking for from the cab of the combine as they start to evaluate their inputs for next season?
Yeah, thanks, Chip. The main thing I tell farmers to look for from the cab of the combine is whether or not there are any weed escapes, and if so, what are those weeds? Escape weeds can mean a couple of different things. You may have a population of herbicide-resistant weeds, and the best there would be to speak with your local agronomist or crop consultant, and they should be able to help review the program that was conducted in 2018 and what potential changes might be needed for the 2019 season. Most likely it'll mean making sure your overlapping residual herbicides that contain 2.5 or more effective sites of action on those key troublesome weeds. Also, you may need to upgrade your corn herbicide program in 2019 to one that provides a longer lasting residual weed control on these tough weeds. Yeah. Not all herbicides are created equal, and many times you get what you pay for. So cutting those costs up front may end up costing yield potential in the end.
Yeah, Don, I think the message about overlapping the residuals is starting to get out there. At least I know it is in the Midwest, but we need to focus on that to get effective weed control, correct?
Absolutely. It's not only effective weed control, but it is also about preserving the active ingredients that we have today in the toolbox. And with those multiple effective sites of action working on those weeds, you have great chance of improved weed control, plus heading off or delaying resistance issues.
Excellent. That was Don Porter with Syngenta with insights on how to use your combine cab to inform your weed management plan for next season.
New Dallara fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yields.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Hey, we're going to be talking with Chris Hawthorne here in just a second. Chris is the acting head of the field crop section at USDA NASS. Now, guys, understand, if you've got a question about how NASS conducts the surveys when it comes to crop production, when it comes to grain stocks, when it comes to, gosh, any of the survey-based estimates that come from USDA NASS, today's a great day to pick up the phone and ask your question, okay? These guys, they want to talk to you about your questions. So if you've got one, please ask it. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. And, of course, you can tweet at us as well. Just make sure that you include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. Like I said, Chris Hawthorne is the acting head of the field crops section at USDA NASS. He joins us now. Chris, my friend, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you today?
Hey, good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on AgriTalk today. I'm doing great. How are
good.
You?
Good. I'm good. Man, I tell you what, I don't know if you heard the word or not, but you know that girl that helps me run the crop tour out there?
Sure thing.
Emily?
Yeah.
Yeah, she gave me my first grandchild earlier this week.
Congratulations. I hadn't heard that. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And I don't know. I mean, a lot of people have seen the picture, but she is perfect, the baby.
Oh, that's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah, Chris has come along on a few, maybe even several crop tours now, both on the eastern leg and on the western leg, and he's out there being, you know, involved and active with the other scouts that are out there on the tour with us. Chris, thank you for making yourself available to answer some of the questions leading up to what is going to be a pretty important report next week on November 8th.
Absolutely.
So take us from August 1 to November 1. And how does the survey change during the growing season?
Okay. So in August, we start off with we have our farmer-reported ag yield survey. August has a little bit larger sample than the other months because we still are wrapping up our wheat numbers, and that's included in the sample. And then we also have our objective yield survey. The objective yield is a half sample of what we normally have because of, you know, the maturity of the crop at that stage, and just, you know, it takes some time to get out there and set up all those plots. We have over 1,900 plots for corn, and it's similar numbers for the other crops as well.
Okay.
In the objective yield programs. So we use those two indications along with some other administrative data. You know, as we look at acreage, we're looking at we're keeping, you know, up with FSA's official numbers out there.
Right.
We also have some satellite imagery that we're looking at. So we're trying to use as much as we can to come up with the best estimate possible at that time.
You know, I think what you just said right there sums it up. Trying to use as much as you can to come up with the best estimate possible. If there's a source of good information and you've determined that it's a good information that you can get from that source, you're going to use it.
Sure, absolutely. You know, we want to be consistent. I think that's one other thing that we're looking at. We want to be consistent. You know, when you're looking at our numbers from 20 years ago, we want to make sure that we're using a consistent methodology across those years. As new technologies come into play and we're able to utilize those in our board process, then we're going to be incorporating that in, you know, as we get that in. But, right. You know, satellite technology is one of those new technologies that we're looking at more and more. But, of course, we want to have some history with it. We can't just, you know, one day turn it on and all of a sudden it's, you know, it's now one third of our board. We want to make sure that we have a feel for what that looks like, you know, in August
exactly.
and September and how that looks like compared to final. So
Exactly. You know, when we added the western leg of the crop tour, Chris, we had guys out there running similar routes. We didn't pull as many samples, of course, but we had guys running those routes that we anticipated we would run on the tour. We did it for 3 years to collect some background data before
Absolutely.
we could go out there and start to release any data. You got to do the same thing. I mean, back testing is one thing, but using it in real time and gaining some experience with new information is there's no better way of getting used to that new source of information.
Absolutely. And you know, I do want to say that, you know, we're forecasting starting in August, we're forecasting what we expect the end of year numbers to be. I mean, just like you guys are on the crop tour with your you know, numbers at the end of the week, you know, that's what we're looking at. So there's differences. You know, we take the raw indications and we apply factors of how historically we've interpreted those indications.
Right. Okay, the farmer survey, the indicated yield from those farmer surveys, I know that they always matter. Does the farmer portion and the farmer response matter more at some times of the year than others? Or also take it a step further, does it matter more in some years than other years?
Well, I think that all the data matters.
Yeah.
You know, we wouldn't be spending the money taxpayer dollars on something if it didn't matter. Early in the season, you got to think about where the crop is in its development, and like I said, that's why we look at only a half sample for the objective yield. It's just too early to really take those objective measurements. We just don't know enough about the crop at that point on the objective side. So yeah, absolutely. In August, we're really relying on that farmer survey indication. In general, more than our objective yield. As we get that crop developing throughout the year, then obviously we've got, and it's not a matter of it's more important. It's just that we have more data at that point, and we can rely on that data, and so we're incorporating that more, I guess, into our board process.
Right. Right. And as more data becomes available, obviously we hope to zero in. And you mentioned on the acreage that you'll use the FSA data, the certified acreage data.
Absolutely.
That really comes into play in October, and it had an impact on the bean acreage estimate this year, didn't it?
Absolutely. We had a lot of discussion internally on what the FSA acres are showing right now, and those are historically, the October report is historically when we incorporate the FSA data as we have it at that point. Obviously, we will see FSA's numbers, changing a little bit throughout. It's not absolute final right now. Some states it's getting close to, where it's going to be at the final. But we have to look at it on a state-by-state basis. Is there more data coming in? And as that happens, as we get to the final, our final December estimates that are published in January, we have to factor in those changes at that point as well as our final survey data.
Absolutely. Okay, real quick, grain's ready for harvest, but the field has not been harvested. What happens with your objective yield plot?
Okay, so we are going to be going out there, and just like we did in September, October, in November, we're going out to those plots. If they haven't been harvested, we're going to be taking those, harvesting those ears. We're going to be sending it to the lab. We're going to get real-time, ear weight data, grain weight data that's going to feed into what we're going to be using in the board. If it's been harvested, then obviously then that sample's done, for the year. If it was harvested in October, then that's when that's going to be our final. So, we're going back out there again in November.
You still look at harvest loss in those plots, though, right?
Absolutely. After that, plots are harvested, one quarter of our samples are part of what we call our gleaning survey. So we're going to go back out there. And we're going to, after it's been harvested, after the farmer has contacted our enumerator, we're going to go back out there and we're going to set up a gleaning spot, look at every kernel that's on the ground. We're going to look at ears, whole ears. We're going to look at kernels. We're going to look at stalks, that are laid over. And that'll help give us an indication of harvest loss before and after harvest, obviously.
Exactly. Chris, 30 seconds here.
Sure.
2018 harvest, weird one, great in some areas, not so good in others. Does that have an impact on how you do the survey?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the key to this year is just the advancement of the crop. In our last report in October, we were looking at an 80% of the samples processed in the lab were mature. Way higher than most years, recent years. So, absolutely, we got to take that in consideration.
Chris, thanks, buddy. I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you, Chip.
All right, that is Chris Hawthorne, acting head of the field crop section at USDA NASS. We've got Dr. Darren Hudson next on AgriTalk.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Brian, today's markets are proof that these things can change in the tweet of an eye.
Yeah, Trump's out tweeting today, and it's good news for soybeans this time around because he said he had positive talks on trade with China's president. And here we are. We're up 25-plus cents in most of those contracts right now. So kind of a euphoric rise, I think. Probably not real surprising that these tweets came today, and we'll probably see more ahead of Tuesday's elections. The question is, what happens after the elections? What happens at that late November meeting between Trump and China's president? And will there be a short-term resolution? I guess until it happens, we'll continue to ride on each of Trump's latest tweets.
You know, one other thing, yes, we've got the tweet, and the bean market was trying to work to the upside even before the tweet happened, but it's the start of a new month, too, Brian. Does that have anything to do with it?
Well, it could, and if we see the funds come in and stay in on the long side of the market, so that it's covering short positions now, but that's something to keep in mind with the flip of the calendar.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What's the impact on corn and wheat?
Well, obviously, the spillover is impacting corn. It's up about 4 cents. The wheat market, it's higher too. It's mostly 3 to 6 cents higher. So definitely an impact.
Yeah, and the livestock trade kind of limping into the end of the week with some mixed trade.
Yeah, hogs are narrowly mixed. They tried to firm up, and then they backed off some, and then cattle are mixed as well, waiting on cash trade.
Gotcha. Thanks, man. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Comcast.
We're AgriTalk, powered by Farm Journal, the name you've trusted since 1877.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. The Dow is up over 200 points again this morning as well. Just want to throw that out there for you, because that fits in with what Brian was talking about. I think that some of the support from Trump's tweet early this morning, it's not only having an impact on the soybean market, corn market, wheat market, it's also having an impact on the equities trade here this morning as well. Now, a few weeks ago, out on the Farm Journal College Roadshow, we were down at Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas, and I met Dr. Darren Hudson for the first time, and I was impressed. I said, listen, we got to have you on again, and we've got him, Dr. Darren Hudson from Texas Tech. He's also the director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness. Dr. Hudson, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Chip. Glad to be back.
You bet, man. Hey, now I want to start a conversation about the economy here, but I want to look at it just a little bit differently, because we just wrapped up another earnings season on Wall Street, and for the first time since the tariffs have been out there, several of the businesses that reported strong earnings, they also included some warnings that future earnings could be threatened by tariffs on products coming into the U.S., steel and aluminum in particular, and by tariffs on U.S. exports into some other countries. These tariffs, when you look at the impact on a business's ability to earn and to compete, is there a real impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, obviously what we're talking about are, where that tariff or the product lies in their sort of supply chain.
Yep.
And that has something to do with the timing, but also the magnitude of the effect. So, when you're talking about a company that is building something with a lot of steel in it, it's obviously going to be impacted by, higher prices. But those are inputs, so, they've had contracts, they're delivering against things that are out there. And so what we see in the immediate, sort of earnings reports is we're looking backwards for a quarter. And, that's already sort of baked into the pie. Now what happens is these escalating prices on these inputs then put a squeeze on them. And so then in the next quarter, that's what they're warning about. And so obviously what we're talking about is level. So a product that doesn't have a lot of tariff inputs in it, it's not going to see a big impact, but these heavy energy and metals intensive products are going to get hit pretty good.
Yeah. Now when they take that kind of approach, Dr. Hudson, it seems to me like, I'm going to use a little bit of Fed speak here. We're talking about transitory issues here. They're short term. Now, long term, it can start to have an impact if it affects that company's willingness to invest money in their future. Is that slowing down at all?
Yeah, I mean, you do see the sort of two layers of this. So, for example, if we look at cotton forward sales to China, they've rolled those over to 2019. They've moved out of a lot of positions for this crop year and moved them into 2019, which is signaling sort of, hey, we think this thing may get better next year, and we're going to go right back to business as usual. But the longer that time horizon looks like, the tougher it gets for investors to justify risking that money, for a lower profit industry. The other thing that goes on too over time, we have to be aware of is that, companies will shift their supply chains around to try to avoid those costs. They're not going to be as low as cost as they were before, obviously, because we would have been doing that before. Mm-hmm. But certainly, we can circumvent, say Chinese sourcing on some products. We develop those things elsewhere. But that requires a whole new set of investments, and investors get skittish, and rightfully so. It's a risk. It's a risk management strategy for them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, another area of investment that I've been trying to keep tabs of is what our competitors are doing. Are they investing in more bean acres, in more cotton acres? Are they investing in more infrastructure? And you know what I'm talking about here, Brazil. Mm-hmm. Brazil has got to be looking at this as not only a short-term opportunity to move more product, but longer-term, they've got to be looking at it as an opportunity, too. They want to stoke the fires between the U.S. and China.
Exactly. It becomes a question, I think, if you're in Brazil, you're a Brazilian industry investor, you go, okay, if I think this is going to last a while, this really spurs investment in infrastructure development in Brazil, adds acres, adds roads, adds, all kinds of things there. And the longer this thing plays out, the longer that looks like it plays out, the more sort of an opportunity it gives Brazil to become a wedge in that market between in China, between the U.S. and Chinese buyers. And you know, they'd be dumb not to take advantage of that opportunity. And I think they are.
Yeah. And then you've got Bolsonaro down there that says, listen, if Brazil wants to come in and buy from Brazil, I'm sorry, if China wants to come in and buy from Brazil, that's great. But we can't let them buy Brazil. The new leadership down there, that's going to be a point of conflict.
Yes. Brazil has always ebbed and flowed between being, you know, very welcoming to foreign ownership to absolute outright bans on foreign ownership.
Right.
You know, unlike our system of government, there's sort of it is schizophrenic at times. But yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, what the Brazilian government or the new Brazilian government is going to do is going to focus more on export sales, not on foreign direct investment. And the Chinese have been very interested in foreign direct investment. They love to buy up, you know, big swaths of Brazil and guarantee themselves supplies of soybeans. And so in that sense, you know, maybe the Brazilian government kind of helps us out a little bit indirectly and keeps it. Because, I'm partial to U.S. soybean producers. I mean, we can produce high-quality soybeans, you know, as cheap as the Brazilians can and get it to China as cheap as the Brazilians can. But we certainly can't do that with a 25% tariff.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So let's assume that this tariff structure remains in place into March of next year. I'm just picking a date here, Dr. Hudson, into March of next year. What's the impact on U.S. cotton, U.S. soybeans, all of agriculture? What's the impact look like?
Well, so, if there's no anticipation of any movement, then the price effect remains there. And so then what happens is, farmers and bankers and everybody else are looking at these lower prices with no real hope of them, recovering or having a demand surge to get us out of that hole. And, so financing gets constrained, acres get constrained. Those acres are going to flow, if they flow anywhere, they're going to flow in the direction of the highest return, which will, not be soybeans. Necessarily. So, you could see some shifting of acres around. You could see some idling of land in order to try to, if all the prices are where they are right now, it may not be attractive to plant anything. But certainly with no anticipation of a way out, those prices are going to be reflected in those cash flow budgets. And that's just bottom line going to affect what gets planted.
Yeah. We wonder just how closely the markets are watching the trade issues with China. We get that tweet this morning that Trump spoke with Xi, had a good conversation, scheduling meetings for November 20 at the G20 meeting down at Argentina. And today we got bean prices up 25 cents and cotton prices are up more than 200 ticks. I mean, obviously these markets are paying very close attention to what's going on here.
Absolutely. I mean, they're being rational in trying to hedge their positions to protect themselves, but they know that reopening those markets, especially in the short run, is a big deal for U.S. agriculture. I mean, it just bottom line, and not just U.S. agriculture. You can tell by the stock market response. General investment in general industry. So I think all of those people have been very skittish, and it's sort of there's a pent up demand out there for those products because they know that the Chinese they have to have them, and they would rather buy U.S. soybeans than they had buy them elsewhere because they're better and they're the transportation's more reliable, everything. So the minute we get any solid news, you're going to see these kind of responses. They're watching second by second, for sure.
Absolutely. Hey, Dr. Hudson, when I was down there in Lubbock, I did not ask you this question. I feel stupid that I didn't ask you. What is the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness?
We used to be called the Cotton Economics Research Institute, but we've changed the name because we've taken on a lot more responsibility. But You know, we're part of the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute Consortium, which is, you know, University of Missouri, us, Texas A&M, Arkansas University, and Nevada, Reno. And we do all the sort of the policy baseline analysis. We work with USDA, we work with Congressional Budget Office, but we produce these estimates each year. And so we spend a lot of time, you know, analyzing policy. I do a lot more of the international side. That's kind of the play that we've dealt with. But it's a great group to work with, and we have a lot of fun.
All right. Good stuff. Well, hey, good luck to those Red Raiders the rest of the season.
Well, we need it. Every bit of it we can get.
All right, Darren, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chip.
That is Dr. Darren Hudson from Texas Tech, the director of the International Center for Agricultural Competitiveness. Coming up next, we're going to talk weed control this fall.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Don't miss your chance to win one of two brand new John Deere Gators during the Valent Fully Loaded Sweepstakes. The 2019 John Deere Gator is the ultimate utility vehicle for getting things done. Fast, powerful, and capable of handling payloads up to 1,500 pounds, the John Deere Gator works just as hard as you do. Enter for a chance to win now at ValentFullyLoaded.com. That's ValentFullyLoaded.com. No purchase necessary to enter or win. Ends March 10, 2019. See official rules for details at ValentFullyLoaded.com.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
During the 2018 growing season, Indiana farmer Rob Churchill was asked to take a close look at Pancha Votivo 2.0 from planting to harvest. This is his first impression.
Well, I farm northern Newton County and southern Lake County, so I'm the third generation of my family that's farming. When my dad was alive, we worked our ground, we tilled, and we farmed sandier ground, so water's a limiting factor for us in the summer, and so we, as the equipment progressed, we moved into no-till. We've been full no-till probably now close to 15 years. We do some corn after corn no-till, but most of it's a corn bean rotation. I think the seed treatments are huge, really, because we're pushing the envelope. We're wanting to plant earlier, wetter, colder, And with the no-till, you know, our soil is not warming up as fast as a lot of the tilled ground. And the guys that are tilling, we're still out same time they are early in the spring and getting going. And we end up with a better stand, a healthier plant, which in turn, we think roots are better. So when we do get dry in the summer, we're more prepared. Our biggest challenge now is nematodes by far. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to use Poncho Votivo, is because that's one of the only and the safest form. It looks like the Poncho 2.0 versus the competitor. It does seem like the 2.0 does have more of a roots established root system and a lot more root hairs, which in turn will be good because we can utilize more of the soil and get more nutrients and water out of the soil because of that. We use Poncho Votivo because of the nematodes. In our ground, I mean, we've tested for nematodes and we have them, both corn and beans. I mean, and we do see that the Poncho Votivo helps that, so we treat everything with the Poncho Votivo.
We'll return to Rob's farm at harvest to see how Poncho Votivo 2.0 impacted yields.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Now, this is a segment that we're doing that, honestly, I made notes this spring that we had to talk about this topic, and it's burn down, fall burn down, because it is such an important thing. And let's bring in Gail Strotman. She is the Heartland Regional Technical Manager for FMC Ag Solutions. Gail, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Chip?
Good, Gail. Yeah, I'm doing just dandy. Gail.
Good.
Okay, so this spring, I'm watching social media, obviously, and there were a group of guys that got together, and they were tweeting out and basically saying, if you're not doing fall burn down, you're doing it wrong. And they were talking about the weed control that they had in the spring. Tell us about how this fall burn down works.
Well, when you think about weeds, and some, especially with the high percentage of a no-till environment that we're in across the Corn Belt these days, many of these weeds that we predominantly fight early in the spring are fall germinating weeds. You know, mare's tail, chickweed, henbit, a lot of these winter annuals, they're all germinating, you know, here in October, getting going, getting established in November, and then they go dormant over the winter, and then they come on with a gangbuster as soon as weather conditions warm up enough in the spring. So they've already got a 4 to 6 month head start on you. Yeah. So when you're trying to go out there in March and April and take care of these just ahead of planting, you're dealing with a weed that's in most likelihood fairly mature already, and it's a lot more difficult. So the advantage or the benefit of a fall application is you can go out there and get those weeds when they're babies and they're just germinated and they're just growing now, and treat them now, and a lot of times you will be so much more effective in controlling those with a fall application because they're small. And the other part of it is those weeds are getting ready to go dormant or set themselves back or shut down for the winter. And so a lot of times when you treat them now, they'll take a lot of that herbicide that you put on then and take it to the root. And so you get it can be so much more effective, because then when you turn around in the spring and roll into those fields, they're clean. You roll out there in April and you're getting ready to plant, and it's like, wow, there isn't anything here. I can roll right in here and plant. I don't have to worry about finding a calm day or a warm enough day to get my burn down on. I can get ready to go plant because I took care of a lot of this problem last fall.
Yeah, it just makes so much sense to me, Gail. And like you said, we talk about cover crops, and when you kill that cover crop, it takes everything that it's got in the plant up top and takes it back down into the roots. You're right. Talking about doing the same thing with herbicide here on weeds.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you're using the time of the year and what that plant is trying to do and use it to your advantage.
Yes.
And so and so that's why those fall treatments can be so effective. So, I mean, just going out with a 2,4-D or some dicamba in the fall, some of those systemics, and taking them to the root system, and especially when you're dealing with some of the perennial weeds like dandelions or yep. pokeweed, or if somebody's trying to take out an alfalfa stand, or some of those grasses in the fall that come up like downy brome, or some of those ones that are out there like quack grass, yep. use the time of the year to help that herbicide translocate down to the root system, and fall when they're getting ready to go dormant is the best time to do that, because it's just going to take the herbicide along for the ride and just shuts it down.
What about on a pasture that you got some weed problems in? Is this a good time of the year to do it?
Absolutely. You know, musk thistles, Canada thistle. You know, musk thistles are biennial, so they germinate 1 year, and then they'll come up and they shoot their seed head the following year. So what you do is you go out there in the fall of this time of the year and put on your 2,4-D or your in your picloram and those kind of systemic herbicides. Put those on. Cleans up a lot of those pasture weeds so that, again, next spring when you're trying to do row crop work, you're not pushed to, oh, crap, I got to get my pasture sprayed.
And when we're talking about row crop, I mean, what a time saver in the spring.
Absolutely. So, you know, the other advantage of that fall application is if you take care of those weeds now and it's clean next spring, it makes a difference in how fast that field warms, those soils warm up.
Yes.
And because you're absorbing that sunshine on the soil surface and the weeds aren't blocking it, they dry out quicker so that you can get in there and plant a couple of days earlier. So I understand for a lot of growers it's a challenge a lot of times from a time standpoint in the fall because of harvest. And once you're done with harvest, you're kind of wore out. But if you can find the time or get someone to do some spraying in the fall, it can pray, you know, big benefits for you in the next spring and getting you a jump start on the following season.
Yeah, what's the return here, Gale? I mean, nobody's going to do it if there isn't a positive return to it.
Right. I mean, you know, it's hard to put a big number on that. A lot of it comes down to what's your time crunch in the spring? How many acres are you trying to get across? You know, this fall application thing, you don't need to do it on every acre, but if you've got some fields that you know are notoriously bad for weed control, and maybe you struggled to get mare's tail under control in those fields in the spring, or chickweed or henbit are always a problem because they're going to seed before you can get there. Maybe it's a wetter field in the spring that you can't get in there as early. Those are the kind of fields where you want to go out and target those this fall and get a jump start on it. And, you know, like I said, sometimes you can get a return on that where it's, you know, a week ahead of time you can get in that field and plant. So a lot of times with weather conditions being unpredictable as they can be in the spring, it can be a huge financial benefit to a guy to be able to get in there and plant it when he wants to.
Yeah, I've only got about 15 seconds left, but this is step one in overlapping and lapping those residuals, right?
Absolutely. So take care of your winter annuals then, but you can put some residuals in the fall to help you on some of the early weeds, but then you're also going to come back next spring and put a pre on and overlapping residuals to really target your summer annuals, your water hemp and your palmer and those kind of problem weeds.
Absolutely. Gale, thank you so much. I really appreciate this conversation. It's really important stuff, man.
All right. Thanks for your time, Chip.
You bet. That is Gale Strautman, Heartland Region Technical Manager for FMC Ag Solutions. Thanks for joining us today, everybody. Thanks to Chris Hawthorne from USDA NASS and to Dr. Darren Hudson from Texas Tech. Come back this afternoon for AgriTalk After the Bell. I'm going to be talking with Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing. And tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, it's a free-for-all. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Johnson going to be talking about the issues of the day on AgriTalk.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome to No Man's Land, a new podcast from U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan.
Bacon is the gateway for a lot of people who are vegetarian.
That has to sink into our listeners. Bacon is the gateway meat.
I invite you to join me each week as I shine a spotlight on powerful women in agriculture while empowering all women in agriculture, going where no man has gone before.
No Man's Land with Tyne Morgan is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about upgrading your weed control with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.